Blog Talk Radio.
Good Friday night, everybody, and welcome to another great episode we have here of Suspense Radio. I am your host, John Robb, and I am joined by the ever-popular co-host, Star Rena, author of In the Name of Revenge, available now on Amazon.com. Go pick up your copy. And I'm telling you right now, we have a great show for you tonight. We have author Liz Wheel, along with author Nora McFarlane to talk about their books, and it's going to be exciting. We also have a SmackDown here that's going to pit Vampire versus Vampire, Anne Rice versus Stephanie Meyer. Which vampires are better? So, everybody, sit back, relax wherever you are. Hopefully you got some air conditioning on if you're in Southern California because it is still very hot here, because 60 minutes of Suspense Radio starts right now. So, Star, author of In the Name of Revenge, available on Amazon.com. Go pick your copy up now. How are you doing tonight?
John, I'm great. I'm great. Thanks for having me again. What is this, my third time here?
You know, it just gets so much better. Why even count? Because it's just so much fun. There's no point.
It's true. Yeah. Well, thank you for having me again.
Well, no problem. Thank you for keep coming back. And I want to remind everybody here that on Tuesday's show, which you can go back to and listen, all the archive show, which if you have iTunes download, if you have the Netflix, if you have Netflix, you can get us on the Roku, 75 other podcasting sites, or right here on blogtalkradio.com/suspensemagazine. You'll be able to go back and listen to all the archive shows. Last on Tuesday's show, we had author Chris Farnsworth of Blood Oath, author of Blood Oath, and his publicist from Goldberg McDuffie, Megan Beatty, on. And that was a really cool show to kind of hear two sides of the coin here on what a publicist does, PR person, along with what the author has to do to get one. So we found that extremely interesting to kind of have both of them on, and we were fortunate to be able to get them on. Now, I want to go to you, Star, and I want you to go ahead real fast, and if you have any book reviews, go ahead and do that, because our first guest here, and I just want to let people know, we're going to have her on here in about, 3 minutes. And everyone got to get ready and tune in because extremely exciting Fox News legal analyst, Liz Wheel, we have here on the phone in a second with her books Face of Betrayal and her newest Hand of Fate, and then another exciting announcement coming up in April 5th, 2011. So, Star, I want you to go ahead and give your book reviews real fast.
Real fast?
Well,
so do I have to talk really super fast, like one of those speed readers?
You do. You got to go fast. So go through them and
okay.
10 seconds now.
Oh, all righty. Well, the first one I have is Body Heat by Brenda Novak, and I believe we just interviewed her a few weeks ago, as a matter of
yes,
fact.
Yes, we did, with D.P. Lyle.
Yes, absolutely. I remember that show. She has the Department 6 trilogy out. The first one was White Heat. The second one, which has just been released, is Body Heat. And there's going to be a third one coming up called Killer Heat. So they are romantic mysteries, and the whole series just sounds great. Well, rather, the trilogy. So that's one of the reviews that I have. I do have another one, and this one is called Something Borrowed, Something Blue, but not blue in the way you think, kind of like blue cheese dressing, which is by Cricket McRae, And she, this is like a cozies. These are, well, actually they are the cozies. And she has out Lie in Wait, Heaven Preserve Us, Spin a Wicked Web, and then this last one, Something Borrowed, Something Blue. I believe each one of them comes with recipes. So if you like cozies, this is a series that would probably be a lot of fun for you. So, John, those are the two that I have. And how many do you have tonight? Two, three, maybe four?
I only got two tonight. But
two?
I also have a cozy here by Rita Mae Brown, which is coming out in September. I'll get the date here. It's called A Nose for Justice. And this book came out from Random House. And the due date, publication date, is September 21st, 2010. Of course, we got our advance copy, and this is another kind of cozy. And it is it's the Miss Murphy series, and it's by Rita Mae Brown and Sneaky Pie Brown. Now, I believe that Sneaky Pie Brown is the dog in this book. So this is another, just a fun little quick read, pick up, go right through it, especially here in the summer. You can get through this book, and it is a great little cozy. The last one I have here is by Noah Boyd, and it's called The Bricklayer, and this book actually just came out on August the 31st, and it's in paperback by Avon, and so Noah Boyd, The Bricklayer, got tremendous reviews, and when you have Lee Child and James Patterson and Patricia Cornwell, you know, telling you that the book is good, it's definitely one that you want to pick up. So I want to move along right now here, Star, because I want to go,
yes,
without further ado, to our good friend and our supporter of Suspense Magazine. She's been a supporter from us since the beginning when we, you know, Red Face of Betrayal. And, you know, now she has Hand of Fate. And I must say that we are on the covers of both of them. So I want to go ahead. Right, I know. So I want to bring on right now, and I want to bring on Lise Wheel. Lise, how are you doing tonight? Thank you so much for joining us. It's such a pleasure to talk with you again.
I'm doing just great. So glad to be back on the program.
Yes, and Hand of Fate.
Hand of Fate.
Hand of Fate.
You have to say it right. The emphasis must be on the correct word.
Exactly.
See, I'm a man. I can't really say those things that well. So I, you know, that's why I have women on the show with me, because they correct me.
Very smart. And you do recall, of course, the premise of Hand of Fate, which is that the younger, much smarter, perkier co-host, female, was the first suspect killing off her radio talk show host.
Oh.
Yeah.
You better be careful, John. You had better be careful.
I know. Please don't give my wife any other ideas on how to collect on this life insurance policy, because I dread that every day.
We're in cahoot, her and I, so, chance.
So, why don't you go ahead and, you know, because the book came out a couple months ago. It actually, I believe it, did it come out in April?
Came out in April. My books, The Triple Threat, always come out in April. The next one is coming out next April. And, yes, Hand of Fate. Well, you know, I did 7 years of radio with Bill O'Reilly. And
correct.
I, at the end of that, it was either, you know, I need deep psychiatric help, or I can write a book about killing off a talk show host, a radio talk show host. And, and of course, the first suspect is, as again, a much smarter female co-host. So that's the first scene. I'll just set it up for you a little bit. I don't want to tell anybody too much. But the first scene is Jim Fate, who's got this great radio program, which is, again, much smarter female co-host.
I love how you keep emphasizing that, by the way. Thank you.
Yeah, sorry about that. Co-host meets his demise. He goes out to get a cup of tea. You know how always we did a 2-hour show, and you go get your, I always get my cup of tea in between, and gee, I guess just something happened. But what was so funny is when I was writing this and then sending it out, you know, people thought about it. People jumped on the bandwagon. Was it me? Was it me? You're trying to kill me? And Bill thought, you're trying to kill me? It's like, it's always about you, Bill, right? I mean, come on. Could there be somebody else that was trying to kill?
Really? Exactly. But
I mean,
that was,
come on. Isn't that just a male perspective, right?
It is. It is, you know. That's the way that we are.
I'm at a slumber party with 8 kids over here tonight. So
hey, that's fine.
It's not an adult party. It's 4 girls, 4 boys, different ages running around.
Hey, you know, I have 4 kids of my own, so that's why I lock myself in, you know, I'm going to cliche it, in the man cave here, and I just have to try to get away. because I have a lot of estrogen around me at my house because I have all women. I even have female cats. So,
Good for you. You are a lucky man.
That's why I've been married 15 years, happily, I might add, because she is listening, so I must say that on the air. So now, yeah, this is your second triple threat novel, and we talked before about the characters on in your book, and it's almost like the characters are kind of like your three-headed monster of yourself because of your background.
Oh, gee, I never thought of myself as a three-headed monster, but if you...
Well, you know what I mean.
No, I think he's getting back at you.
I know. I feel like I've, you know, since I just kind of dissed him at the beginning of his show, now he's going to come back and get me.
Exactly.
Perfectly appropriate. Yeah. Allison, federal prosecutor. I'm a third-generation federal prosecutor. My granddad was. My father was an FBI agent and then a federal prosecutor, and I was one as well. And I love that job. It's the best job in the law ever. I mean, best job you can ever have. And so that's Allison, and she's out there. And she's probably the main protagonist, although it changes. You'll see over the books it will change that the storyline develops with the different characters. Nicole, an FBI agent, a woman, which is a really tough road to hoe because, you know, there aren't that many female FBI agents even today, and it's very much a male-dominated thing. And yet she's tough, and she's got this little girl that she's raising on her own, and she's got a lot of issues, and she's got her other friends, including Cassidy, who is a TV reporter, which is, of course, what I do now. So and Cassidy's got her own issues, but she can get into angles and places that the other two in, quote, law enforcement can't get into. So they bring to each other different things vis-a-vis television broadcast, radio, FBI, federal prosecutor. They can bring those things together, and they're dear friends. And the most important thing, of course, is they love to eat out together. They love to go to restaurants and have their triple threat dessert, which is how the triple threat series came about. Triple threat meaning three women, but triple threat because of they love their triple threat dessert. At the end of their every meal, they sit there and have that and talk about it and talk about their cases.
Now, and also looking, because now all three of them kind of in this book have their own personal demons that they're going over. Now, was that something that you kind of pulled from another real life on your experiences of being a lawyer and a reporter, or was that just totally, you know, something else that was kind of made up?
A little bit of both. I always change the names to protect the guilty.
Exactly.
But no, I don't think anyone, male or female, no one's perfect. I mean, we all have our own demons. We all have our own foibles. And so when they go through issues and they talk about, you know, domestic abuse, for example, Cassidy went through that in the first book. You're going to see some other things coming up, breast cancer and heart of ice. I mean, these are things that women deal with. And if I don't think I'd be a very realistic author if I just wrote cartoon characters where their smiles are on their face every day and nothing's wrong, and that's just not how we live our lives, and that's not what friends are for either. So I know some people think, oh, gosh, you know, I just want a mystery. I just want just fun. I don't want to deal with, you know, domestic violence and other issues, but I guess myself as a person and as an author, I think that's just part of life. You got to deal with it and talk about it, and if it gets other people talking about it, even if they're mad at me for bringing it up, well, that's a good thing in my mind.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I've always mentioned before, is if you write a character that is either loved or just absolutely people write you and say, I hate that character, I just hate that person,
that's,
well, you know what, you've done your job.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Right, because that means that there was an emotional bond of some sort, whether it was love or hate, that reader felt on that character.
Exactly.
Because, yeah, if they don't say anything about it, then it's like a forgettable character.
Right, right. And that's what I want to do. Because how many books, honestly, have you just picked up and read three pages and just kind of put it down? Whereas I get, I mean, I've done it many times.
Do you want me to answer that? Because I can count maybe 1,000.
Yeah, exactly. but there have been so many readers. Well, I'm going to plug my website, leasewheelbooks.com, L-I-S-W-I-E-H-L, books.com.
Yeah.
And they write in to talk to me, love me, hate me. But either way, they have strong emotions about the characters in the books. And I feel like, okay, I've done my job. I've done my job at that point. And there have been people that have written in and said, you know, my son was sick at the hospital, and reading to him or reading to myself while he was sleeping helped me get through this. And your characters, and I've gotten emails saying, you know, well, I hated what that Nicole did. How could she possibly do it? But that means they're into it. They're getting it. They're reading it. And so I write back and say, well, I'm sorry. What would you think? And, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the point is that we've got a dialogue. And for me, that's the best thing as an author, is to get that kind of response.
Yeah, I mean, that is absolutely the best. Like you said, that's probably the best compliment you can receive, is when someone writes in and says whether or not they love or they absolutely hate your character, because you're like, yes, we did it. We got it right. And that's the most important thing.
That's right. So, they read it and they got something from it. And the other thing is with this Triple Threat series, and I really believe this and went into this thinking, that you're going to get not just entertainment with the three women and all of the issues that they're dealing with, but you're going to get real-life knowledge. A lot of, and I wasn't joking when I said I changed the name Protect the Guilty. I use a lot of cases that I've prosecuted or that I've reported on and put them in the book and change everything around. And then I go behind the scenes to grand jury, to investigation, the things that, you know, if you haven't been in my roles, I don't mean to sound, you know, hoity-toity here, but if you haven't been in my roles, you wouldn't know what they were. You wouldn't know what a grand jury is. I mean, the only people that know what a grand jury really is like are federal prosecutors, people who've been on a grand jury, and witnesses, because there are no judges, there are no defense lawyers, and nobody else is allowed in that. It's a completely secret thing. So you'll get a behind-the-scenes look at a real grand jury. What happens? And it's a fascinating process. I mean, to me, I guess I'm a nerd, but to me it's a fascinating process.
Yeah, I mean, because that's the same thing. I remember when I was on jury duty, I kind of got the behind the scenes to be able to figure, and I was actually on a double murder case where I was actually sequestered. So I kind of got that feel, and it's something that's way different, of course, than the TV. And the good thing is you bring that realism, so people, you know, it's not that, you know, character cartoony. It's the real deal.
It really is. I mean, you'll see, and if you look at Face of Betrayal, the first book, the first scene is with a murderer who had done a murder for hire, and he wanted to murder his 5'4" quote unquote 5'4" problem. Well, that's based on a real case.
Oh.
The hand was not based on a real case. I didn't really murder Bill O'Reilly, but he's still, you know, alive and kicking. But the Heart of Ice is based on a real case, a murder for hire again. That was kind of my specialty. So if anyone out there, not meaning I do murder for hires, I mean I know how to get, I know how to catch murder for hires.
Right, right. You know the background of all that stuff.
Yes.
So
who would do it?
Now, I have a question here that came off the chat room, and they're firing him, and I'm telling him to just hold off for a second because I had some stuff I wanted to ask. But they're kind of wanting to know exactly what role did April Henry play in the writing of the books?
Oh, April's wonderful. I mean, she's great. She's right there in Portland. I'm a Washington State girl, so, you know, we wanted to do something in the Northwest, not in New York. We wanted to be out in the Northwest. And so between the two of us, because I've spent a lot of time in Portland as well, it's a fabulous relationship. You know, we go back and forth with emails. I'll write a bunch of stuff. She'll say, Lisa, I don't understand that. I mean, what did you mean by that? This has got to be accessible to everyone and smart people, but not just lawyers. And so she'll sit me down and say, what does a trap and trace mean? Explain that. And I'll explain it. And she'll do research on it. And she's fabulous. I mean, April's great.
So she's kind of like your right-hand man, I guess you want to talk about it, like when you're doing all that. So you're like bouncing – so you guys are like bouncing ideas off each other, and she's just like
let's do this. We're going to go with this story and this – and we're going to – and here's, you know, here's the outline. Here's what we're going to do, and I'm going to write it up, and then you, you know, tell me what you get and what you don't get and what doesn't make sense to you.
Ah, I gotcha. So that's great that you can have somebody that, you know, you can do that with.
She's fabulous.
So another question I got for you here is, where did you seem to find the time to write a novel? Did you, like, set a daily goal, or do you do it late at night?
You know, I was an English major, then I got my master's in English as well, and then I was a law school professor, And what the dean said to me at the time, what you have to do to get tenure at a law school is you have to write very boring law review articles. And he said to me, you know, truthfully, you have to, you know, footnote your navel. I mean, seriously. He said, it doesn't have to be the best, but just write something. Sit down and start writing, and then it will be the best because you'll go back and you'll revise. And so the wonderful thing about computers as opposed to typewriters, which you guys probably remember. I mean, I'm so old, I remember typewriters.
I do. I took typing class.
Yeah, I did too. Thank you. Which is that you can revise and print it out and cut it up and do it again. And that gives you a lot of freedom. But what I always did was set a goal of X pages per day. I'm going to do X pages, whether it's 1 or 5 or 10, depending on how my week looked or whatever. And I'm just going to get, you know, whether it's writing it, reviewing what's been edited and brought back to me, or whatever that goal is, what is the goal of that week? Because I think if you set yourself out too far in advance, at least for me, I guess I have a small brain or something.
Oh, no.
Then that's too much. But if I think, okay, here's a deadline for a manuscript, what do I need to do between this date and that to get it done? And then just parcel it out day by day. And whether it takes its place in the morning after the kids have gone to school and I've got a morning off, or where it takes place after I've come home from work from Fox and I'm still kind of hyper so I can't really go to sleep and I get a couple hours in then, wherever that is, the goal is those pages, X pages, whatever I've set for myself, have to be done. That's kind of how I've done it. It sounds boring. It's very methodical, but it's boring. That's just the way I do it. I don't have, you know, like, oh, my gosh, I've got to, you know, brilliant strokes and write 50 pages. I don't do that, but I guess I wish I could.
Well,
you're more
disciplined.
What?
You're more disciplined.
Yeah, I guess I've always been that way. Just I have the idea. You've got to have the idea first of what the overall book is going to be about and what you're trying to portray. With Heart of Ice, it's going to be a psychopath. I mean, she, and I can't give you the real name, but this is a woman who murdered 2 children when she herself was a child, and she drowned them both, okay? She got, she went to some fancy schmancy place in Maine to get some juvenile detention. She got back, she got out of that. She came back to the state of Oregon and got a job teaching swimming lessons.
Oh.
Right. And asked a guy to do another murder for hire for her. Not another, the first murder for hire. She'd done 2 murders by herself. But because the records in Oregon of her first 2 killings had been expunged because she was a juvenile, no one could see those. So YMCA hired her. She was working as a physical therapist. She was a cutie patootie. I mean, giving the guy who was going to be the hitman pasta salad along with the gun. I kid you not. I mean, I've got this all on video. Was
wow.
Incredible to me. And it really hit me in the head of our vision of sociopaths, psychopaths, that we think they're all like, you know, big bad guys with guns. No, not at all. You would see her in the street. You would hire her to teach your children to swim. And so there's some pretty amazing scenes about that. And I knew it, but no one else knew it. And I was so happy because at the end of prosecuting that case, and I'm kind of giving away a little bit, but I got the law in Oregon changed so that the juvenile records would not be expunged for certain convictions, including murder of 2 children.
Really? I mean, when you have children, and myself when I have children, do you find it a lot difficult and a lot more, you know, harder, I don't know, I like to make up words, to write that style?
What do you mean, style?
Would you find it more difficult when you're talking about, you know, the murdering of a couple of children, even though it was a child doing that, and seeing how you have children, I have children, do you find that a little bit, you know, that you have to take yourself to a little more darker place in order to accomplish that?
It's a very dark place. I mean, to think that someone could do that, and what I loved about being a prosecutor, as Allison does, is wearing the white hat and always getting the bad guys. And there's no, the bottom line is not the bottom line when you're a prosecutor. The bottom line is putting away the bad guys. But when you're talking about somebody like that, so vicious, and she, you'll see in Heart of Ice, she brings in all the women. She's very manipulative. People that can do that without any conscience, I mean, I'm sure you've all met them in your life, are amazing. I mean, they're amazing liars because they have no conscience. So they can lie and smile, and the rest of us think, oh, gosh, what a nice person. I mean.
Yeah, I divorced one of them.
Yeah. It's true. I usually kid about this stuff, but I'm not about this. It's really frightening. When you look around in your life, and you, I bet everyone listening will know someone like that, that they can lie and lie to your face, and you would never know. You think like warts would pop out, or Pinocchio's nose would go, but it doesn't happen that way.
Do you find that sometimes they believe their own lies? That most of the time they would.
Let me give you Exhibit A. OJ.
Here we go. Here's the lawyer coming out. Exhibit A. Let's go.
I do believe that O.J. Simpson believes he didn't kill his wife and her friend. I believe that because I think he was either so high on something or such a psychopath that he really thinks that he's going to go out and find the killer. I think he's convinced himself of that. That's a psychosociopath, mm-hmm. in my estimation.
So it's basically almost like going out of your body and looking back saying that's somebody else doing that, even though that you're the actual person doing it.
Well. You know, that's a rational explanation. I don't know that I can give you a rational explanation. I think you're right. I think if you and I were to say we went out of our body for a minute and then we did this horrible thing and then we came back into our body, that makes sense. But I don't think with some of these folks that even occurs. I think they're always in that Neverland.
They feel justified. What they're doing, they justify it. Someone wronged them, so now they're going to wrong someone else.
And you'll see that with Heart of Ice, this main character, that she was wronged, as was the real person that I prosecuted. She was wronged early in her life, which is horrible and traumatic, obviously. But many of us go through horrible and traumatic incidents and don't, you know, go out and kill two kids when we're children ourselves. So.
I'm telling you, I'm scared right now. I'm just telling you right now, this is just scaring me. And
you're
going to
be okay, John. All right.
And that is, I need a hug. I need someone to give me a hug.
Wait, but you're safe in your radio studio. Oh, wait.
You just killed me in Hand of Fate. What's the difference? I'm not safe nowhere.
I'm here.
If I get a letter mailed to me, there is no way I'm opening it.
Yeah, don't open your letters. Tell them to me.
Okay. There's just no way. So now, when you're taking your experiences from your cases, or have you actually been able to sit down and interview someone that has been deemed a sociopath?
I've done both.
Okay.
Because I, as a prosecutor, of course, you know, I'm talking about this case that I did, but also as a reporter, I interviewed a woman who, you've heard of honor death in the kind of Indian culture?
I have not. My wife probably has because she loves documentaries, and I'm sure she's seen it on something.
Yeah, I mean, a woman in California tried to drown her two children and herself, actually, because her husband was going to divorce her. And in the Indian culture, that would have been, like, the most degrading thing in the world. So the better thing for her children would be to kill them. And I was able to go into her prison cell and talk to her about it. And why she did it and what she felt. She was not a sociopath. She really believed that. I mean, that was her upbringing. That was really what she thought. She was bringing her kids to a better life. Now, who I would love to have interviewed is someone like Susan Smith. Remember Susan Smith?
Yes, I do.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, when you were mentioning that, I had that in my head because...
Me too.
She blamed that a black person went and killed her children in South Carolina.
Right. See, and that's so different to me because this woman... she admitted to it. She said what I did was kind of an honor thing for my honor. Susan Smith, I mean, that's the most disgusting. That's just not even, you know. But that, to me, again, would be an example of a sociopath that just has no morals, no moral compass, and then beyond that is willing to blame somebody else, a totally innocent person, and send them away.
Yeah. It's very frightening. It is.
Are you afraid to like walk out of the studio now? I'm so sorry.
No, it's still sunny out here, so at least the sun's still going on. I know it's dark back where you are, so at least it's sunny here, so I should be okay, and I'll just drive home with my wife, and I'll be like, okay, just be real nice.
These women will give you, I hate to be complete downer, these women will give you some inspiration, I hope, too. They are all friends, and when I, sorry to sound like all feminist on you here, but I love that these three strong women, with their foibles, with their character flaws, with all their issues, come together and help each other out. And women need to do that more for each other. They help each other out through thick and thin. They're there in their personal issues, their professional issues, and it's a fun mystery. You'll get a real sense of what happens on, in real law enforcement and TV land and radio land, and you'll also see three strong women kicking butt and liking each other.
Well, and it is great to see, basically in a suspense thriller, I believe, male-dominated genre, that you have come up with three fascinating, strong, perfectly written characters that are female that are able to kind of jump into this. And, the stories, you're literally frightening. I have goosebumps. And that's just a fabulous thing to do.
Are good.
Yeah. So, well, I'll tell you what. I want to remind everybody that you want to go and you want to check this out, Face of Betrayal, Hand of Fate, Heart of Ice, coming out on April the 5th, 2011.
And email me at leastwheel@books.com. I promise I respond to every email I get.
She does. She responded to us when we first emailed you.
Exactly. I did.
That's amazing.
Absolutely. I'm a type A that way. I will respond. I promise.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what. I want to thank you so much. I want to thank you so much for the support that you've given us over the years, over the past, year and a half for our magazine.
You guys are the best. Thank you. Supporting suspense books and thrillers. We got to all stick together.
We do.
I agree.
So, and maybe one of these times we will actually get a meet, because I know we keep missing each other here and there.
Next time I'm out there, I would love to see you. Wouldn't that be great?
That would be great. And the next time that we go out there, we'd love to meet you. That would be great.
Anytime. I'll give you a tour of Fox. We'll go out for dinner. That would be fun.
That sounds great. All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us. And
thank you so much,
Lise. And everybody, again, that's Lise Wheel, LISWIEHLbooks.com. Go check out Face of Betrayal. Go check out Hand of Fate. Heart of Ice, again, April 5th, 2011. What a fascinating guest that she is. And the book, like I said, I have goosebumps. And if you can get, me to have goosebumps, that's just something that you have to do, because I've kind of seen it all. So, but, moving right along, which we have to do here, because, that's the way we are, is we're going to bring on our next guest, which is Norm MacFarland. And she has written her book here, which is called A Bad Day's Work. It's her debut book from St. Martin. So, Nora, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for having me on.
Nora, thank you for being on the show tonight. I also want to thank you for joining us tonight. Before we get into speaking with you, I do want to mention that if you have any questions for Nora, go ahead and call us at 877-666-9320, and we'll put you on the air with her. So, Nora, for those listeners out there that maybe don't know too much about you, can you just maybe give us a little background, tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I studied theater in college, and I was very fortunate to get a job at CNN right out of college, and that was an amazing experience. I worked in Atlanta, and I stayed there for about 3 or 4 years, and then I went to film school, which was a dream of mine, and I thought, oh, I finally, I've made it, this is going to be my life, and I got there, and I didn't like it.
No, you didn't like it? Is that how you got started writing then? Did you leave the film industry and come over to the literature side?
Well, I'd always been a fan of mysteries, but I thought that, writers, I would sort of start out and I'd write a couple pages and it wouldn't be any good. And I just thought, oh, well, writers are these special people with talent, and I don't have any. So, I never really considered that I could do it. And then, one of the, I mean, the great thing about film school was that, you know, we had to take all different kinds of classes in, you know, we had to take audio and editing and cinematography, and we took screenwriting, and I just loved it, and I got really excited about it, and, you know, I think for the film industry, you know, I love movies. I've always loved movies, and I love movies about the film industry, and I had this really romantic idea of what it was like. And when I got there, you know, and it was, you know, not at all like that, you know, it was sort of a big wake-up call. And I loved the screenwriting, though. And then after grad school, I actually got a job as a shooter, a TV news photographer.
Oh, I was thinking, see, I'm in suspense mode. When you said shooter, I'm thinking of something else. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, my mind went there too, John. I think I know what you're going
to. Yeah, because you were saying the romance of Hollywood, and that's actually more like a horror novel. Then you all of a sudden jumped to shooter, and I'm thinking, see, it's a female-dominated show here, and my head's just spinning. If I need my producer, please go get me some kind of a drink to take this off my head. Okay, go ahead.
I should clarify, I did not take a position as a paid assassin in Bakersfield. I took a position
at the target range.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, but if you could, you would have had a lot more time to write books, probably, because, you know, your time, you just go bang, boom, job's done, and then you can just keep writing.
That's right. I think those kinds of jobs are probably very lonely. You probably spend a lot of time, you know, doing surveillance work, and you could do a lot of good reading, probably.
Yeah, hiding out, you know. Take your e-reader along, and
right. That's probably the greatest invention for you know, the paid assassin in the last 20 years is the e-reader.
Make sure he gets the one with the light on it already. So yeah, he's all set. So tell me, really, then, what was the inspiration for you to actually do this novel, this A Bad Day's Work?
Well, I was working as a TV news photographer called shooter in the industry lingo, and in Bakersfield, and I just thought, gosh, this would be such a great setup for a mystery. You know, I was going out and I was seeing crime scenes, and I was interacting with police, and then there were all these sort of goofy, you know, feature stories, and the pace was grueling, and I thought, you know, the pace would be great for a mystery too, because you just are constantly going, you know, when you're working in TV news, there's always another story, there's breaking news, or there's something, and I got really inspired, and I said, you know, I'm going to give it a shot, I'm going to do it, and I knew exactly how I wanted it to be. I was going to have this great main character that was just like, you know, Kinsey Malone and Sharon McCone and V.I. Warshawski. It was all the great PIs that I had, you know, read, you know, since I was a teenager, and I loved. And I started to write it, and it was awful. It was so bad.
So that first draft kind of went in the trash then, is that what you're saying?
It did. And then, fortunately, I got a job at Barnes & Noble doing author events, and I met great authors who really inspired me to give it another shot, and especially an author named Bonnie Hearn Hill, who wrote thrillers for Mira, and now she's got a young adult series out, and she was so supportive, and she's such a cheerleader, and I said, all right, well, I'm going to try again, and this time I tried it instead of being hard-boiled, you know, instead of trying to do it like Ross McDonald. I thought, well, you know, I'm kind of goofy. I'm a goofball, and you know, maybe I should try to write it so it's funny and it's just fun, and it worked. It clicked, and
that's where you got Lily Hawkins.
That's right. That's right.
So that's how she came about then. So she's a little bit of you. Does she have a little bit of you or?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely she does. I gave her all of my worst qualities and then some, probably.
Well, you know, I have some good qualities, and they must have come from you, too, so.
Well, no, I hope, you know, thank you.
Tell us a little bit about Lily. What kind of a character is she?
Well, you know, Lily, the thing about Lily is that at the beginning of the book, if you asked her, you know, what her life was like, she would tell you that it was just fine and that all of the problems in her life are the fault of other people. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with her. And I think because, you know, she's the narrator, the reader kind of buys into that a little bit at first. And as Lily goes through the book and, you know, she has this horrible day. You know, everything that can go wrong goes wrong. She ends up on the run from multiple bad guys and the police. And she loses, like, if something's important to her that day, she's going to lose it. And through that experience, she starts to kind of, you know, wake up to the way she's been sabotaging herself and the way, you know, she has very shallow relationships with her friends and her family. And, you know, people that she thought were her friends, you know, turn on her, and other people that she'd written off really come through for her. And she starts to realize that, you know, maybe she needs to make some changes in the way that she looks at people and, you know, the way that she interacts with her coworkers. And the suspense, you know, the suspense obviously is from the mystery and can she solve the mystery and can she stay alive.
Right.
But also, you know, can
yeah, long
she
enough
change?
To, huh?
Right, yeah. Hopefully she can stay alive long enough to figure out her messed up personal problems.
Well, Nora, I got a couple questions here from the chat room that I'm going to get, and I'm going to actually, there's two of them here that kind of can go together. So the first one is, it's kind of a two-parter. So what reaction did you receive from the very first person you told about being published, and kind of who was that, and who received your first autographed copy of your book, A Bad Day's Work?
It's funny.
Now, maybe the person who asked that is the one who actually wants to know if they received the first copy.
Well, the person who received the first autographed copy was actually a gentleman who works for Barnes & Noble. And because I used to work for Barnes & Noble in Bakersfield, which, you know, when you work for a chain, it's very easy to feel like, you know, maybe the corporate, you know, mom and dads out there, you know, that you're very far from them and that they aren't really that invested in, you know, that store out in Bakersfield, you know. But my editor told me fairly early on that, you know, when they were making, you know, the initial pitches to, you know, the various bookstores and things, that Barnes & Noble had been supportive of me, you know, and that, you know, they were really excited that, you know, someone from their team, you know, a former member of the team, you know, had been successful. And it really, really touched me. And I really, you know, because it's so hard when you're removed from corporate headquarters and you don't know, you know, if you're a family, you know, or you know,
a number.
Just, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, when I heard that, I teared up a little bit because it was like, you know, I devoted, you know, 3 or 4 years of my life, you know, in Bakersfield there to that bookstore, and you know, felt like I really was trying to be a part of that community and the community of Barnes & Noble. So, you know, I sent them a book as a thank you, and that was actually, it turned out that was the first one that I ever signed.
Well, that's
and
right.
Now, and,
they were
and,
there
and,
giving
and,
you the support, yeah.
And since that yeah. you'd handled, like, some author, you know, signings and things, is that something that you're going out and doing? Are you doing yourself as an author and doing some book tours?
Yes, and I have to say, it's funny because, you know, I've done so many author signings. You know, it's just part of my job. Like, I never even thought about it. You know, set up the chairs, you know, do an intro, you know. And now that I'm on this side, it's suddenly, I'm just, you know, I'm a complete idiot all at once. And it's the same with, you know, doing,
First of all, I got to applaud you on that because I think that's the first time that a woman has ever come on and claimed to be an idiot. So I could big clap for that one. Typically, they're calling me the idiot. So big applause for that one. Hold on. Here we go. That's
okay,
what I'm talking about. Yeah.
John, your moment's gone. Sorry.
Okay, you know what? Because I need something here. So you go right ahead. Keep going, girls.
I can tell from the from the echo in your man cave there that you're all alone.
I'm all alone. I am. I just have me and my diet and my computer and my books, and then I'm just all alone.
Aww.
I know.
Now, Nora, book signings. Let's get back to that. You're going in Georgia, Florida, and California. So you're flying around.
I am. Well, I'm doing the Decatur Book Festival tomorrow, and I'm really excited because I live in Georgia, and I live in Macon, and I'm really excited about doing the Decatur Book Festival. And then on the 18th, I'm going to be in Jacksonville at the Barnes & Noble there, and that's, you know, it's a nice little drive for me from Macon. It's about 4 hours. And then I'm flying out to California and doing a couple signings out there.
Bakersfield area?
Yes, in Santa Monica on the 23rd, and then Bakersfield on the 25th.
So you're going to the you're going to the 3rd Street Promenade then, right?
That's right.
Going through, that's a great place. I always try to tell authors when they're asking me about tours, I always say, make sure your PR person or whatever gets you on that 3rd Street Promenade, because the good thing about a place like that when you're going, because when you go to like Macon and places like that, it's not a big tourist area. But when you go to a place like Santa Monica, you're going to get people that live in Santa Monica, but you're going to get a lot of people that don't, and they're going to take your book back to where they live. And then you're going to, you know, it's kind of like a, you just kind of grow it out virally that way, because they could take it back to New York or, you know, Washington or Texas, wherever they're visiting from. So it's a great place to go.
And it's a beautiful store, too. And,
well, it is a beautiful store, yeah.
And I'm very lucky. I was very lucky. The CRM there, the community relations manager, is actually from Bakersfield. So it's, you know, I think it's like going home in a way, you know.
Right.
Now, A Bad Day's Work, it's kind of like a soft mystery. It's got the humor in there. It kind of reminds me of Janet Ivanovich, her Stephanie Plum series.
Uh-huh, thank you.
You know, because she's got that same kind of wit going on there, and she's always getting into one disaster after another. And Lily seems like she's kind of following the same lines. Did you get a lot of your inspiration maybe from Janet? Or did you know about hers when you created Lily at all?
Well, you know, she was becoming really popular when I worked at the bookstore, and it was also around the same time as Chick Lit was exploding, and you know, and
here
there was
go.
This sense that it was okay to be funny, you know, that you know, that you could have. I mean, the thing that really stuck with me the first time I read a Stephanie Plum book was how there really was scary violence, you know, and there really was, you know, characters that, you know, the stakes were high, you know, there was a lot of danger, and, but at the same time, you know, there was a lot of humor, and that she was able to mix them so well impressed me, and
that is talent.
You know,
it
really is. I mean, that's not, I mean, you can't just do that, you know, I mean, it really does take a lot of talent and effort, and she did it really well, and so,
and it seems like so have you.
Oh, well, thank you. I tried.
Now, this is a part of a series. This is the first in the series, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
There are three for sure, and I'm just finishing, you know, doing a final polish on the second one this weekend.
And are you going to release the name of that, or are you going to keep that hidden under wraps for
She's
now?
She's telling us who it is. What's the name of the book?
Well, I can't promise that it won't change.
I know. We know those stories.
We won't hold you to it.
But, well, I have been calling it Bad News and Gone.
Ooh.
Mm. And is it looking to come out about, do you have an idea of when it's coming out?
Next August.
So it's next August, so we have that one. Okay, so we're looking about a year from now, and then you say you're working on number three. And now, are you going to stop at number three, and you're going to do a new character, or do you hope to continue on Lily Hawkins?
I would love to continue Lily. I also would like to start a new series that I, you know, have. It's actually, it was the first screenplay I ever wrote when I was in film school. Was a mystery, and I would really like to turn it into a book. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Is it
got the humor with it too, or is it just a mystery?
It does have the humor.
Great.
Well, I want to go ahead and remind everybody here, too, that this is Norm MacFarland, author of A Bad Day's Work. Book is out. And if you want to find out a lot more information, you can go to Norm MacFarland. That's NORAMCFARLAND.com. And you can check out, you know, the Lily Hawkins stuff, biography, news events. Maybe you'll catch her on a signing that's coming out. So, Nora, I want to thank you so much. But you're not going to go anywhere, right? Because you are going to stick around for the SmackDown.
I wouldn't go any. I would not dream of leaving.
Oh,
exactly.
Good. This
so
is
going to
be a good SmackDown.
So everybody, it's you know, I'm not, why even, you know what time it is.
I'm already giving you instructions in the dressing room. I expect a tough, clean fight. Protect yourself at all times. With questions from the challenge.
So here we go. We're going to keep with tonight's theme of women, and we're going to go with the SmackDown of Vampire versus Vampire. So it's going to be Anne Rice Vampires versus Stephanie Meyer Vampires. Two of them with two totally different views of what vampires were coming back from maybe Bram Stoker and Dracula. And I want to go to you, Nora. I want to say, which side of the vampire line are you on, Stephanie Meyer, Anne Rice?
Anne Rice.
Oh, that was
good,
Anna.
Didn't even have to think about it.
I was thinking about it. Star, I'm going to go to you.
I'm sorry. I have to go against Denora, but I have to go with Stephanie.
Oh, it's on.
Oh, here we go. Well, Nora, it's going to be you and I teaming up against Star because I also am going to go with Anne Rice. And I'm going to give my reason here real fast is just because I believe that Anne Rice took the vampire genre to a totally different level and set the bar to where now there would never be a Stephanie Meyer without an Anne Rice. There would never be, you know, the I can't remember his name, but I was just gonna say Robert Pattinson and Taylor Lautner without Lestat. You know, without those characters that she brought out in Interview with the Vampire and her series of Queen of the Damned, there would never be a Twilight. There's just
well,
no way.
Well, you know, Stephanie Meyer, she's writing the ones that are, you know, they're more fitting for today. They're modern. They're modern vampires. Anne Rice is, you know,
Nora, you got to back me up. Isn't modern vampire kind of an oxymoron when they're all like 500 years old?
Well, yeah. Okay, you got a point there.
Nora, back me up still, on this one. Am I right or am I wrong?
You're completely right. Well, it's a SmackDown. Somebody's going to get hurt. But, you know, I think that, I mean, nothing against Stephanie Meyer, you know, but it's, to me, those books are not so much vampire books as teen romance books. And you know, it's Romeo and Juliet.
Right, it's a modern-day version of the vampire.
Well, you know, I mean, to me,
Easy version of a vampire. That's what it is. I mean, when those vampires don't scare me at all, and vampires are scary creatures. I mean, they're, you know, when you look into their eyes, yes, you know, they're supposed to be.
You're scared of everything, though, John.
And things like, okay, listen here. So I'll get you back. So when, you know, when you look into their eyes, yes, they're romantic and they're extremely, you know, loving or this and that, but they're not supposed to be cheesy. And Lestat was very much a romantic, but he was very much a ruthless vampire. And well, I think that's the side that, you know, was, and I think she broke the ground after Bram Stoker and Dracula. No one dared to enter that realm, and she stepped off and said, I'm doing it, and then that's what she did.
Well, I think the major difference between the two players, the major difference between the two players, Anne Rice and Stephanie Meyer, is, you know, Anne Rice mainly really wrote for adults. Stephanie Meyer is really more targeted for the young adult.
I don't know, because I think that a lot of teenagers read, you know, Interview with a Vampire.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they did, yeah.
And a lot of adults have read Stephanie Meyer.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. I remember going to see Twilight, and there was a lot of adults in that movie theater. Let's not kid ourselves. Yeah. there was a lot of adults. Now, whether it was because of the actors or this and that, but I do see a lot of, you know, mothers picking it up with their children and they're reading it together. And I think that that's great because I think that more people should read and if whatever they want to jump on and read. But I think that those people who just think that Twilight is the end-all be-all should go back and read Anne Rice because her words are not only, you know, more spiritual in nature, but they bring more, they breathe life into a vampire age that was dead for so long. There was nothing written.
They're still dead, John. They're still dead.
Well, they're undead.
They're all good. I mean, and I'm not a Stephanie Meyer hater. You know, I know it's very fashionable to, you know, say you dislike stuff that's popular. And that's not at all, you know, what I'm saying. But to me, those books are, you know, they're about teen young love. They're about young love. And the guy happens to be a vampire. And, you know, for me, the Lestat books and you know, the Anne Rice books, I mean, that's vampire stuff. And you know, you want your vampires to get a little bloody and you want them to be dangerous. You want to really have to wonder, you know, is that vampire going to do something horrible? And you never once think that Edward doesn't love her with his whole heart.
Oh, boo-ha-ha. All right.
John, I think
we're calling this one for Anne Rice. There's no way.
I don't know. Chat room
scene. No, you did not bring any argument to the table. You even told me that I was correct one time. So you lose, I win, and that's just the way it's going
to
go.
Well, we're going to give this one to you.
I want to go ahead and I want to thank so much for both of our guests on here. You know, we had Liz Wheel on earlier talking about Hand of Fate, her newest book out, and also Faith of Betrayal, and then Heart of Ice coming out on April the 5th, 2011. You can find her at Liz, LISWIEHE, or WIEHLbooks.com. And then our guest right now, Nora McFarlane, with her book, A Bad Day's Work, and that's NoraMcFarlane.com. I'll spell it just in case, N-O-R-A. MCFARLAND.com and her newest book, A Lily Hawkins Mystery, and she is also saying that next August her second book comes out, kind of untitled, maybe titled, but she's going to have three in the Lily Hawkins
What's
Mystery.
Her name.
So Nora, I want to thank you so much for being here. It's
so do I,
Nora. And you've got to keep us up to date on what's happening, and you know we'll do this again sometime. So thank you.
Thank you,
thank
Nora.
You. I had so much fun. Thank you, both of you.
Thank you. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to do a little wrap up here. It's been a great show, Star. I want to thank you again for coming on. I do know that I do have to watch boxing after this because my estrogen level has just risen in my body because of all the women tonight, but that's fine. So on Tuesday's show, we have coming up here, we have best-selling author Richard Dosch and Jillian Hoffman, and they're going to talk about their latest book. So that's going to be Tuesday night, September the 7th at 6 p.m. Pacific. And also next week, we're going to have Brett Battles and William Kent Kruger, both fabulous authors. Thank God I got two men on the show at the same time. So that's going to be coming up too next week. So on Tuesday again, on September 7th, 6 o'clock, Richard Dosch and Jillian Hoffman. So I want to thank everybody. SuspenseMagazine.com. Our September issue is out. Check that out. Again, you can download us from iTunes, Netflix on the Roku. Check us out. Find us on Facebook and Twitter to keep up with everything. Star, thank you again so much for joining us tonight. It's been great. We have
a nice long
weekend coming up. It's going to be Labor Day. I hope everyone goes out there, goes to the bookstore, picks up books, goes and reads because it's important. So
I know
I'm going to be a little cliche, but I'm John Robb, and again, thanks everyone for joining us here on Suspense Radio. And like I said, it's Labor Day, so get out of the chair, go do something, and go read, because we'll see you all Tuesday.